Your new book, Fitzroy's, a selection of poems about the suburb that you grew up. You talk about major figures of the suburbs in that, but you also have a lot of poems about your life there. So what is it about?
Yeah. The book is actually called Fitzroy, the Biography. It's 740 pages thick. It didn't start off initially as a concept. The concept slowly grew. I started to write biographies of famous people in Australia and then famous people in Victoria and then Melbourne. And as I was reading books and biographies and that, I started to see these references to Fitzroy, because Fitzroy was the first suburb of Melbourne. So I started to put the portraits together into a separate folder, and as the concept grew, I started to get fascinated by all the stuff and all the stories in Fitzroy that I didn't know about. So I started to go to the library looking at newspapers and books and following footnotes and IBIDs and pulling out stories and constructing poems of these stories. I eventually did about 400 portraits of people in Fitzroy, right from the beginning of Hoddle when he surveyed Fitzroy, and through the disposition of the Aboriginals and into the migration of the Anglo-Celtic tradition into Fitzroy and the deforestation of Fitzroy, because Fitzroy was a huge forest from Russell Street in Melbourne, right through where the present Parliament is, right up through Fitzroy, was huge manor gums, gum trees. And so they started to deforest it. And a lot of outlaws and people who were sort of trying to be outside the law were going into this forest and establishing little campsites and that kind of thing, until it got subdivided proper. And so because the outlaws were out in the sticks there, also the religious people moved in to try and save their souls, you see. So in the book, you see this history starting to develop in Fitzroy. So there was about 400 different portraits through time. So the book starts at the beginning of Fitzroy, right up to about 1975. But in the process, around about 1954... our family came to Fitzroy from Greece, because I was born in Greece and came out about the age of four from Bonegilla with the Migrant Reception Centre. And so we lived, five of us, in one room in Fitzroy. So I started to write that history also as part of it. And so it became my autobiography. Now, the strange thing, I think, about the book is that when someone writes an autobiography, they normally start on the first page, I was born in 1920, 1930 or whatever. And then the biography unfolds, the autobiography unfolds. But in my book, the autobiography starts 500 pages inside the book. So in one sense, it's also a humbling kind of history of Fitzroy. It's not a negotistical one, because it's not like, okay, there's a 740-page book, I think I'll do it all about me. And so it's not like that. So really it's about the history of people in Fitzroy. It's a people's history of Fitzroy.
So you said that you have 400 portraits there.
Yeah.
What were the criteria that you followed in order to choose those 400 stories to include in your book?
Yeah, well, initially when that kind of thing happens, what happens is you normally concentrate on the big names, like, you know, Mary MacKillop, you know, the Australia's only saint, was born in Fitzroy. So you do a portrait of her, you know, you do, a portrait of Alfred Deakin, who was the second Prime Minister of Australia. He was born in Fitzroy. And, so you do these kind of famous people, but then slowly the famous people aren't really what's so interesting about Fitzroy. What's interesting about Fitzroy is the mix. You have people who are nobodies, you know, people who just showed up in court who were begging on the street, and then the police arrested them for begging in Smith Street. Like there was one bloke who used to have a gramophone in the 1800s, and he used to turn the gramophone in Smith Street and beg for money because he was playing music on the street on an old gramophone that he used to wind up. And when you're going through newspapers, you see an awful lot of domestic violence, an incredible amount of domestic violence in Fitzroy. And so it was kind of impossible to avoid. So I started doing portraits of domestic violence and poverty, and it started to get more and more into the back streets and lanes. I have a difference with the historic society in Fitzroy, who tend to deal with nostalgia. Often you find that they will interview somebody who says, "Oh, it was fantastic growing up in Fitzroy. They, you know, when I was a kid, they gave me lollies, you know." Yeah. Which I'm sure they did give them lollies, but, you know, they didn't, they're not writing stories about the woman that got raped in the Greek shop in Gertrude Street in 1940 or 1950. They might talk about it as a sociological phenomenon of domestic violence, but they will not concentrate on one person's life who had a bad experience in Fitzroy. So to me, these names and these people had to come back to life and had to come and tell their story. There is a interesting writer, Edgar Lee Masters in America, who wrote a book called the Spoon River Anthology. And what it was he goes into a cemetery, and every person in the cemetery stands up to tell their story. And it's a little bit like that. Excepting that Edgar Lee Masters, he makes them tell their story. In other words, I did this and then I got shot and I died, you know. Whereas in my story, they don't do that. In my story, I talk about their lives as I can piece it together, and I try and let them have their voice without being patronizing, so to presume that this is exactly what they would say. I would actually say more like what they thought rather than what they said, because I don't know what they said by and large.
And you also talk in your book about the indigenous Australia that they were in Fitzroy, and how actually they contributed to the development of that suburb.
Yeah, it's actually quite a unique history. Now, one of the things I should say about the Fitzroy, the biography, is that it is history seen through the eyes of a suburb. Now, when you see history through the eyes of a specific suburb, it's a different kind of history to the general official history that is written about the world. Like the history of World War One or World War Two, seen through the eyes of Fitzroy, is different from the history you will find from the eyes of Toorak, because they are different socioeconomic groups and they have different kinds of histories. So the Fitzroy history is peculiar and individualistic. But the interesting thing is when it comes to the Aboriginal history, if you try to do a history of Melbourne and try and work out the Aboriginal history of the Melbourne CBD, you don't find an awful lot, because basically they were displaced very early on and or, as we know, hung in the gallows in Russell Street. And so you don't see a lot of that peculiar history. But when you see it in terms of Fitzroy, something really peculiar happened in Fitzroy. The Aboriginals were dispossessed from Fitzroy within 10 years of the establishment of Fitzroy as a suburb. And they were put out in sort of protectorates and then missions and then camps. And what I found was that the priests that were in Fitzroy were being commissioned to go out to these camps to baptize and marry them as was required. So the people from Fitzroy had a unique position in that they were still connected to the Aboriginals by going out there to proselytize, you know, the word of God, or to baptize, or to marry people, or to bury people, say a few words, etc. And so they were going out to Gippsland and coming back to Fitzroy. Yeah, and so when the conditions in the camps, in these Aboriginal camps, became unbearable and the government was no longer funding them or funding them to the same level, and the toilets were breaking down and there was no food and all that, the Aboriginals migrated back to where they knew, which was Fitzroy. So what you see is the migration of the Aboriginal community back to places like Collingwood and Fitzroy, because they had a few established roots in that area, you see. And so one of the first churches, Aboriginal churches, was actually in Gertrude Street with Doug Nichols, Pastor Doug Nichols, who started the church, an Aboriginal church in Gore Street. And so you see the development of this necessity to have a church that could also serve the Aboriginal community, and coming from the Aboriginal community itself. So when you see a history from a perspective of Fitzroy, you see a unique development, mm-hmm. and you can see the Aboriginal history in a clearer light.
And, of course, it's a Greek program. So yes. he also, of course, discuss about the Greeks and how did they migrate in Fitzroy. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, look, one of the things that must be made clear is that Fitzroy was not Little Greece. Fitzroy was the Balkans. Fitzroy had Macedonians, Albanians, Bulgarians, Hungarians, Serbs, Croats, Greeks, Italians, and later on Turks when I was growing up. So to me, that's the Balkans. And so you had all these different groups and different cafes. I mean, these cafes had their own distinct, you know, the Albanian club was the Albanian club. The Macedonians, I mean, the Macedonian was a problem because you had Serb Macedonians and you had Greek Macedonians, you know. I mean, I grew up in Katerini, you know, so it's from the Macedonian area of Greece, you know. So in one sense, we were kind of Macedonians, but Greek Macedonians, not Serbs, you know. And also a lot of these groups kept themselves separate from each other because there were wars, you know, between them. And so in the book, I talk about us coming to Australia and going to Bonegilla, the migrant reception camp over in Albury Wodonga, and then coming into Fitzroy and being surrounded by all these black faces. My mother had never seen black people before, and she was really worried. All these Aboriginals were everywhere, and there was quite a lot of them in the 50s in Fitzroy, and they were everywhere. But my father didn't care. I mean, my father was a communist in the mountains in Greek during the Civil War. He fought the Germans and then went into the mountains with the Civil War. And he had enough after he'd been arrested 1,000 times. He came to Australia. My father wasn't afraid of anyone. And as I say, it's really interesting, in a kind of interesting reversal of cannibalism, because blacks are supposed to be, you know, the cannibals. But it was actually my father who ate human flesh in the mountains to survive. And so, as I say in one of the poems, my father, he wasn't worried, afraid of anybody. He'd eaten human flesh, you know. So my father, after, you know, trying to get a job as a mechanic and all that kind of stuff, he ended up opening up Kafania, you know, Greek coffee shops and gambling in the back and Greek food, and then turned that into hamburgers so we can get the Australian dollar coming in. But the Greek cafenia were very important because they were where you went to find job. You know, someone would have a job or needed someone to help break down a building or do some labouring job. So they'd go to the cafenia and get someone who needed a job. And it was also a place where you went to get things translated or to find out how something worked in the Australian community, or to have meetings with the Greek community, you know, to find out where they were going to take the children and the wife on picnics out into the countryside. So the Greek experience in Fitzroy was, you know, strong, but by no means total in any sense of it.
Apart from emotional reasons, what are the elements in Fitzroy that you consider significant in formulating the identity of Melbourne?
Yeah. When you look at the list of people who I've done portraits of in the book, you know, we're talking about saints, prime ministers, doctors, engineers, industrialists, gangsters, you know, like the Squizzy Taylor story is in here. Also, you know, the boxing community, you know, there was a huge boxing community in Brunswick Street at the Fitzroy Stadium, which is no longer there. You know, a lot of people have an input into Fitzroy, and also come out, like when Muhammad Ali came to Australia, he went to Tullamarine, he had a look around and he said, "Where are all your black people?" So straight away they put him into a limousine and he came over to Gertrude Street in Fitzroy, you know, to see the Aboriginal community over there. When Bob Dylan came to Australia, he said, "Where are all your long hairs?" And so they put him in a taxi and took him down Brunswick Street, you know, to see the long hairs, you know. So Fitzroy has been sort of a kind of a melting pot, but not a melting pot of just ethnicity, but a melting pot of all the stratas of society, you know, including class elements. Yeah. And so you have the rich with the poor living in the area. And this and people remember their time there because it was a period which is alive. You can't walk down Fitzroy and not see or hear something or do something or go somewhere. And so for me, Fitzroy was a space that made people feel like they were alive, whether it was a good experience or a bad experience. I mean, the difference is like the historic society, they put adverts in the paper that say, "Find out the history of your house." But the history of Fitzroy doesn't happen in houses alone. It happens on the street. It happens in people's heads. It happens in the coffee shops, you know. And so the emphasis of find out the history of your house is serving the estate agent world, you know, the house prices in Fitzroy, which is what the gentrification of Fitzroy had been sort of more interested in. What is the cost of my house today?
Yes. And growing Greek in Fitzroy, growing up as Greek in Fitzroy?
It was very difficult. I'm like, because I say my father had to punch a hole in the fabric of Australian society to be able to exist, because when the white trash in Australia, in Fitzroy, saw the migrants coming in, they're saying, "Who are these people invading our streets and our shops?" And so they would, of course, being strong boys in their own right, would try out the Greek boys. But, of course, the Greek boys had been through a world war. They knew exactly how to defend themselves and what they wanted. And so they would fight back, literally break arms, noses, legs, ears, I mean, they were not to be pushed over because they had nowhere else to go. When you go into a strange area and you've got your little turf and something threatens you, you've got nowhere to run because you don't know where anywhere else. So you hold the ground and fight. And so to me, a lot of those migrants, those Greek migrants in that first wave, who I think are really heroic in all sorts of ways, they fought to have a presence in Australian history, in the Australian soil. I mean, that was a real fight, you know, and we're talking about hospitalization of people.
How about the cover of the book? So we see like a photo of you, like you are just arriving in Fitzroy. So you were like about 3-4 years old here.
Yeah, the photo on the cover of my book is actually my passport photograph to Australia, and I'm about 3-4 years old. And I think what I like about it is that I remember them dressing me up, you know, in that with the straps over the shoulder and all that, and my hair all over the place, and I'm poking my tongue out, and they couldn't, because they were telling me to smile, and I didn't know how to smile, so I used to just poke my tongue out.
Yes, and you look happy though.
I think my parents were quite supportive, you know, like growing up, you know. I mean, we had a lot of problems in our life, but they did try to protect us, and like most parents, I think, do, you know.
What are your memories from Bonegilla, though?
I went to Bonegilla twice, so once when we first arrived, and then later on, actually, I talk about it when we were trying, there was a lot of trouble, there were riots at the camp, and my father took us back up there to get a family out of there. But my memories really are the toilet and the wash area, the Matt Lloyd huts that we all lived in, and really the countryside, just how dry it was. So it was very, very, you know, small memories in that respect.
But yeah, but pretty much like they have like one part of your they engage one part of your mind.
Absolutely. In fact, I in 1981, I did two radio documentaries for the ABC Radio National on the migrant riots at Bonegilla. I interviewed the officials over there and the migrants and pieced together the riots. There were two major riots, 52 and 1961. There were two major riots. In 1952, the army pulled out, surrounded the camp with machine guns because they thought the migrants were going to invade Australia, you know.
Payo, thank you very much for making the time, being here with us.
Okay? My pleasure.
All the best.